Coach, you had the opportunity to sit yesterday and watch the games. Did you get to just watch the games, or were you instantly into prep mode yesterday?
Yesterday we finished up our game with the Colts, went through that, and looked at that, and obviously made some corrections, and then just kind of ground away a little bit at San Diego and Denver, and then watched the game, and then obviously worked on Denver last night and put San Diego to rest for a little while. So very competitive game, and two good football teams. Onside kick was a big play. 3rd and 17 was a big play. But in the end, Denver made a few more. I thought they controlled, obviously, the first half. So a good football team.
On that 3rd and 16, 3rd and 17, what happened on that play? And what did San Diego do? And how did, just from your perspective watching it, how did that play develop?
Somebody made a mistake. I'm not sure who it was. It looked like they were playing 3 under 4 deep, like a quarters coverage, and I don't know whether the safety was supposed to go out there with them, whether the safety in the corner were comboing, or whether they thought they were going to get more help from the underneath player, but nobody took them, and there were two guys on the post, and just nobody out there on them. So, obviously somebody did something wrong. I'm not sure exactly what the communication and the assignments were there.
Yeah, wide open in that situation. You say, how do you lose that guy? Julius Thomas, too. I mean, right. Big athletic guy. Back to your game, though. It was impressive to watch. You had the 6 rushing touchdowns. You've seen your share of big, so-called big backs in your career, going back to the Giants, O.J. Anderson, here, Corey Dillon, Antoine Smith. Which type of guy, if you had to make a comparison, is LeGarrette Blount, based on some of those big bats you've seen?
Yeah, he's kind of unique. He's really a halfback in a fullback's body. He's a 250-pound back, but he doesn't look like a 250-pound back. Like James Devlin's a 250-pound back, but he looks more like a more elusive. He's got good lateral quickness, good vision, good acceleration, and he's a big guy. He can run with power, so he really has a good a lot of different ways he can beat you. He can run over guys, run around them, can outrun them, and he's got very good vision. He finds holes that a lot of times aren't that evident, but when you really study the play closely, you see how quickly he can find it and get in it and get through it. And his pad level's been really good. He's played over his pads very well over the last probably 4 to 6 weeks. And guys aren't getting a lot of clean shots on him, and he's able to either push the pile or bounce off some of those tacklers that just aren't strong enough to get around his shoulders and his upper body.
Every week when there's a guy running the ball or a team running as much as you ran this weekend, and really you saw it with San Francisco and you saw it with Seattle as well, late in the game there's a big run broken. Marshawn Lynch had a long touchdown. You had the long run by Blount. I mean, there tends to be that one run popped near the end of the game, and we always hear from the commentator, see, that's what happens when you just keep running the ball. Eventually you're going to pop one. Is that true, or is that just an adage that doesn't really work?
If you're running the ball, you hope it's true. If you're defending it, you hope it's not true. So,
does running the ball well, though, lead to other good things in your offense?
Well, yeah, sure, of course it does. It certainly opens up your play-action game, and it keeps the defense from getting into a pass-rush mode when they've got to play the run. But I think one of the benefits is that when you call plays multiple times, that the offensive line, tight ends, running back, all the people that are involved there, you get a second or third look at it, and sometimes something that doesn't quite go clean the first time, you get fixed, and the second or third time, you get it blocked a little better, or you get the defense cut off, or whatever it happens to be. Or if they're stopping one play, maybe you're able to run a complementary play that attacks, it looks like it's one thing, but it's something else, and you're able to create some space there. So as the game goes on, I think you can definitely gain some knowledge and hopefully better execution on some of those plays if you have a full complement of them. If obviously you keep running the same play over and over again, maybe you fix it, or maybe they keep seeing it, maybe they play it better.
Now, we were talking about this before you came in. It's hard to remember the last time the Patriots on special teams had a really big miscue. Like you did on Saturday. And I was watching you before the snap, and you seemed to be bothered. Maybe it was it the hurriedness of the offense leaving the field and the punting team coming on, and you think that led to the bad snap? It seemed to be
No, that wasn't it. No, we substituted late, and we've done it several times this year. You've seen it, and we just didn't get the ball snapped in time, and so it's we got to do a better job of coaching it. We just didn't get the play all around executed the way we wanted to, and the snap was fine, but it was a half second too late. We just didn't get off in time, and then they penalized us, and then we didn't.
It looked like they wouldn't let you snap the ball. I mean, it looked like the ref held it up and said you're not allowed to snap it until the other team makes a full substitution, right?
Yeah, right, which that's the way it is. We know that, right. Yeah. But by the time he was out of there, there was, 5-6 seconds on the clock. We still had enough time.
What do you want Allen to do in that situation? Obviously you don't want the bad snap, but if that happens, what do you want him to do?
Yeah, that's a tough play for the punter. I think, what he really wants to do is to try to take a look and see what's on them. And if they're on them, then take the safety and get rid of it. If they're not on them, then maybe he would have time to pick the ball up, either throw an incomplete pass back to the line of scrimmage or possibly get a punt off. But, when you're running with your back to the team like that, you just don't know how quickly they're on you. And I think when he got it, he probably thought he had a little more time than he did and turned around and they were right there. So, I think that's what's going through, the punter's mind is trying to do the best thing, but until you're sure how close they are or where they are, you don't really know what that is. I know in the end he was trying to save us, yardage and field position, but they were probably a little too close for him to be able to get a punt off. So, we were lucky, honestly, that it turned out the way it did with a safety. That's probably the best we could have hoped for. As the play, in the end, when he finally picked the ball up, that was probably the best we could hope for was a safety rather than them recovering in the end zone for a touchdown or getting the ball on the 2-yard line.
So you'd rather have the safety than them on the 2?
Oh, of course. I mean, they're already in field goal range and kick a field goal from there. So
some people are saying it was a pass. But, some callers and tweeters are saying that was a pass. It should have been an incomplete pass. What do you think?
It looked like a fumble. I don't think he really seemed like the ball kind of went out of his hand. It didn't. I mean, again, whatever the call was on the field is probably what it was going to stay because I'm not sure that there was, enough evidence to say this is really what it was or wasn't. Had they called it an incomplete pass, that might have held up too. So, and that's a tough call for an official because, you don't always think the play is going to go that way. And all of a sudden, it's back in the end zone. He's running back there to try to see it and get out of the way and make the call and all that. But I couldn't argue with that call.
So that leaves you with a couple of interesting things. Well, once he leaves the game with the injury, you have your kicker punting and you have your starting quarterback holding. Which one made you hold your breath more?
Really neither one. Steven has punted, not in games, so he's punted in practice and he's punted he punts out there a lot, and Tom's held before, and Tom's held at practice at times. So, we felt confident in both guys.
Do you have any worry?
I thought that Steven punted the ball very well. Yeah. But as far as him being able to execute to a decent level, I thought that that didn't surprise me. But I thought that the first punt was a great punt. The second, then the third punt was another real good punt. And actually, the punt that Ryan gave us on the safety was a very good punt. A lot of hang time, put the ball over on the right. And, Slater went down there and kind of cut him off. And I don't know where they ended up with the ball, like the 30-yard line or 32-yard line or something like that. So that was, that was good field position play for us, too, considering where we were punting from. So. That's part of being ready in the playoffs. You just never know. And, fortunately, those guys were ready and they came through. They did a good job.
Are you going to bring in another punter or go with what you have on the roster right now?
We'll see where we're at. We'll see where Ryan's at and, just take stock of everything here in the next day or so and try to do what we feel like's best. I'm not sure what that is.
Bill Cowher had a great weekend. He had the interview with you. And he also had, I thought he did a really good job of explaining to people like us who don't really see it instinctively like coaches, did a good job of describing coverages and what it takes to disguise coverages, the importance of it versus Peyton Manning. And when I was watching, I was thinking, okay, it's Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. How hard is it, the degree of difficulty of disguising versus Peyton and Brady versus, say, your average quarterback? I mean, how difficult is it just to disguise versus those guys who have seen it all?
Well, yeah, I think it's very challenging. And of course, they make it, let's say Denver, you know, makes it hard on you because they a lot of times we get into formations that force you to declare certain things, whether you're going to move a linebacker out, whether you're going to put your corners over on one side, whether they're going to stay backside to a tight end, things like that, to try to get some indicators on what the coverage is going to be. So, you know, if they would just line up in the same formation every time, it would be a lot easier to disguise because, you know where they are and you can, you know, you have a little more control over it. But when they are going fast and they change their formations a lot and give you different looks, then it's hard for you to get lined up in what you're going to call and then try to disguise it and make it look like something else. It's sometimes it's just challenging just to get lined up and play whatever it is you want to play. So, which in the end is the most important thing. I mean, disguising is certainly a big part of the game and it's important, but it's not as important as playing what you have called. So if you can't play what you have, then it doesn't matter whether you disguise it or not. It's not going to probably be very good. So, but that's the issue. And they don't make it easy for you. So, as much as you want to disguise, sometimes they put you in a bind.
How interchangeable or not interchangeable are your linebacker positions?
Well, I mean, we have to have the players we have on our team. That's all we have. So there has to be guys have to be able to do more than one thing. We have to have some depth within our own team. I mean, you know, we can't there's nobody to bring in. Realistically.
But I guess what I mean, are the job description for each of two or three different linebacker positions similar to each other? I mean, is it easy to make a leap from playing a weak side linebacker to a strong side or a middle line? I mean, how difficult are those transitions in your system?
Well, I think in the end, it all comes down to the player. Look, we've had players that have been have been able to adapt from one position to another, and then we've had I've coached other players who really have a hard time doing that. And I think that's, you know, people in general. Some of us are you know, good at one thing and not good at multiple things. Some people are good at a lot of different things, and you know, the production and performance is all kind of about the same no matter which one it is. So it's, you know, it's funny, you know, sometimes you know, you move a guy from left tackle to right tackle or left corner to right corner or left guard to right guard and it's seamless, and you do it with somebody else and it just, you know, blows their whole world apart. I mean, they just can't do it or not do it very well, or they look like two different players. So obviously, if a guy has a hard time doing that, then we wouldn't be looking to do it. Guys that can make that transition fairly easily or move from corner to safety or defensive end to linebacker or tackle to guard or X to Z or whatever it is, then that gives you more flexibility in your game planning and some of the adjustments that you make. I do think it's important that guys understand those positions. So, I mean, if you're a guard, you got to understand what the tackle's doing. If you're a Sam, you got to know what the Will's doing. If you're a corner, you got to know what the safety's doing, vice versa. So the more that you understand those things, then probably the better it'll help you play your position. So we do some of that anyway. Just even if we never have to move them, I think in the end it still helps them have a better grasp of the overall play that we're trying to run.
You know, Collins had a good game on Saturday, and he got a lot of acclaim for it, but I'm sure there have been some other moments this year where you've seen steady progress and maybe we haven't talked about it, a play on special teams or plays on special teams. When did you first know? I mean, rookies are tricky, just like you talked about. Some rookies get it immediately, some takes a while. When did you know that this particular rookie got it?
Well, I think he, you know, he showed up quite a bit in the spring, you know, starting all the way into our spring workouts. So his athleticism, his intelligence, his learning ability, his being able to adjust. You know, granted, there was a lot at him, and, you know, he made his mistakes like any rookie did, but you could definitely see that he had a good makeup as a football player. He didn't get rattled. He's very he's got poise. He can concentrate. He's got tremendous athletic skill. He's an explosive player. So, you know, he's got a lot going for him, and as he's gained more experience, he's you know, just done more things for us, and but he's been making plays all year.
We've talked about guys like this before. You know, you got him in the second round, and a lot of times it could be the school, his team's record overall wasn't good. He's clearly an exceptional talent at a school that wasn't doing so well.
Well, his senior year.
Yeah, his senior year. Is that what it was? Is that what made him available, or was it did his versatility work against him when it came to the draft? Because, hey, he's a safety here, he's a linebacker, where are we going to use him? I mean, why was he available to you?
Well, I would say that there probably was a little bit of maybe a question of what position to play him at. You know, as you said, he played safety as a freshman. He played, you know, quarterback in high school. Played safety as a freshman, then he played inside linebacker, then he played outside linebacker in a 3-4, then he played defensive end in a 4-3. So is he an end? Is he an outside linebacker? Is he an inside linebacker? You know, that his versatility might have worked a little bit against him, and he was good in a kicking game. You're right, they didn't have a good year his senior year. They were 0-12 or whatever it was, so you know, probably wasn't as productive as maybe some other players were at other schools where there were better opportunities. But, you know, he was a steady, competitive, tough player that did a lot of different things. And I think, you know, as he's, you know, been able to grasp our system and do different things, I think we can see how versatile he is. I mean, we've seen him blitz. We've seen him make tackles in the line of scrimmage. We've seen him take on blockers. We've seen him cover tight ends, receivers. Playing a kicking game, run 40, 50 yards and make plays in close quarters in line with his strength and his power. So, you know, he's got a lot of versatile skills, and I think, you know, with the way the game is, spread formations, close formations, kicking game, that, you know, he's really not, I would say, uncomfortable anywhere. You know, he's just as comfortable behind the line of scrimmage as he is, you know, split out covering Fleener on a fade route.
I have a final question for you. You have another question?
Well, I just wanted to ask you. Okay. Go ahead. We've been talking about identity a little bit throughout the year with you, and the identity of this team and how it was forged and how it developed over the course of the season evolved. The last few games, you've really run the ball much more so than in previous games. I mean, yesterday threw the ball just a little more than half as often as you ran it. How much of that is by design heading into it, and how much of it is just the way the games have taken shape, the weather, et cetera, in the last few weeks?
Yeah, well, I think the way the game plays out, I mean, certainly the weather was a factor in the Buffalo game, much more so than it was against the Colts. But, you know, anytime you're playing from ahead, you know, with a 14, 10, whatever point lead, I mean, it's a lot easier to call runs and be balanced than it is when you're behind by that same score. So that's definitely a factor. But, you know, in the end, look, nobody likes to run the ball when you're not gaining yards. I mean, you can say you're going to run the ball, but if you're gaining 1 or 2 yards a carry, who wants to call those runs? I mean, run a quarterback sneak and get that. So you gotta find a way to move the ball. And if you're gaining yards, it's easy to call them. If you're throwing the ball and you're gaining yards, it's easy to call passes. I mean, the key thing is to execute the plays and move the ball and score points. And so if we're doing that, then our offense is being effective. If it's not, then we got to find a way to do that. That's really what it comes down to.
You got your 19th playoff win with the win on Saturday, tie with Don Shula, one behind Tom Landry. Makes me wonder, you were in the same division with Landry for many years. He probably wasn't happy to see you some of those times, but I'm wondering if you had any memorable interactions with Tom Landry, he with the Cowboys, you with the Giants at the time?
Yeah, not too many, but other than the fact that in that division at that time, as you mentioned, Michael, you know, Landry was calling the plays for the Cowboys, and Joe Gibbs is calling the plays for the Redskins, and, you know, Coryell was calling the plays for the Cardinals, and then eventually Hanifin after that. So you know, as a defensive coordinator, you're kind of going up against, you know, the head coach and their offense, you know, in that division. And, you know, Landry's system was a very unique one. I mean, one that I think we see very little semblance of today. But it's it was an interesting one to defend and compete against because of the just the way it was designed and you know, the volume of it and kind of what they tried to do. You know, it was very unique. And, you know, really haven't seen much like that in quite a while.
What was the toughest part? What made it? Yeah, what
for,
made it?
For those of us that don't know, what is that?
What made it unique?
Well, I would say that their whole, a lot of their offensive system was based on deception, and every play had a complement to it, and so you rarely saw the same play twice. So if they ran a down block on one play, the next play they'd run a fake down block and think that the defensive lineman would play into the down block and they'd try to run inside. Or they'd run patterns that were looked like they would start out to look like the pattern, and then but they would the receivers would run different routes and it would really be a different pattern that started out looking like the same thing. And each formation had probably, you know, 6, 7, 8 plays off it. So it would, you know, every formation would have, you know, maybe an inside run, an outside run, a reverse, a couple play actions, and, you know, maybe a, you know, another play or two in there that, you know, somehow fit into the misdirection or off, keep, you know, keeping the defense off balance. So it was, they were very balanced, run pass, inside outside, and like I said, each play kind of had another play that went with it that looked the same, but, you know, attacked in a different place. You know, they did the shifting, usually double shifts, so would force the defense to communicate. They'd line up with the backs in one spot, then they'd shift to another spot, then they'd shift again, then they'd go in motion, then they'd snap the ball. So obviously there wasn't a lot of checking by the quarterback, but there was a lot of movement by the offense. So in terms of your defensive adjustments, you know, that was a communication challenge for you. Different, but, you know, similar to the Redskins' philosophy. They weren't a big, you know, change the play, check off kind of team like, let's say, Denver is. But they would give you a lot of different formations, a lot of different looks, but they would run the same plays. The Cowboys had, I mean, the volume. And then the volume of their protections was enormous, that they had, you know, I don't even know, probably 30, 40 different protections. Because they had play-action passes off of almost every run, and obviously you can't – each run's different, so then therefore each protection would be a little bit different because it has to tie into the run. So, you know, you have guys, you know, pulling and blocking guys on the other side of the ball, you know, so if they blitz, it's kind of hard to get to them, but it looks the same to the linebacker, so if they're not blitzing, they're playing run, and, it, you know, so it was a very – again, a very unique offense to that you had to defend, and you know, when I went to Detroit, you know, I had a good background in it because Ed Hughes, who was the running back coach at the Cowboys under Landry, was the offensive coordinator. So we put in that system, so I understood kind of the fundamentals of it. And but it was a very hard offense to put in. They had been running it for, you know, 10, 15 years, and, you know, were very far along in it. On a new team with a new staff, putting it in was very tough because of the volume and the amount of things that, you know, everything fit off something else. And, you know, it was hard to get the basics in to ever get to all those multiple adjustments. So it's very, very complicated.
I think it'd be even harder now, right, with the limited practice time to install something like that. Just like, you just don't have enough time.
Well, honestly, I don't think anybody really coaches offensive football. There weren't many that coached it like they did then, just like nobody coached the flex defense, you know, like the way Landry ran that. I mean, it was very unique. You know, Dick Nolan did it a little bit, but nobody did it to the degree that, you know, Landry did it with the stances and the alignments and the reads and everything. It was, you know, it's truly its own, you know, stood on its own 2 feet and wasn't really a cousin or, you know, had any connection to any other system. And I would say offensively, you know, even the linemen shifting, you know, the hopping up and down off of Remember the that. Two-point stance. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
all over the place.
That was something that Stram did a little bit of when he was at Kansas City, you know, back in the early AFL days. But, you know, you just nobody else did it. I mean, it was – but it was very much a part of their system because they wanted to make it hard for the linebackers to see the back shifting. So they would stand up while the back shifted and, you know, you had to sort them out and – that's the way they did it. But, I mean, just nobody does that anymore. And, honestly, nobody was really doing it when they were doing it.
Well, an opportunity to try to tie Tom Landry in playoff wins this coming Sunday. Coach, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Okay.
All right, back in a moment. Salk and Hawley here, WEEI.